The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live by telephone right now, dial 905-725-1907. Toll free in North America, 1-866-905-7325. Worldwide, 1-866-656-5477. Email Joanne, realityradio101, at yahoo.com. And now, your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, Gary, and welcome everyone to Down the Garden Path. Thank you for once again spending your evening with us, learning and talking and sharing about gardening and all things garden, plants, and landscaping. And, of course, my passion of landscape design. And I'm looking forward to my talk tonight for a variety of reasons. So, first of all, I just thought I'd talk a little bit about what's happening in my garden. And I know the weather has certainly been challenging, as I'm sure it has been for your gardens. We went through a real drought in May with the plants really struggling and getting off to a slow start because there was no rain and some really high temperatures. We struggled with a frost about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, and then went right to some hot days. So it was definitely not ideal temperatures or weather for gardening in May. And now in June, we're having really cool temperatures and a lot of rain. It's only the 15th of June, but I think we've had enough rain that for the whole month of June and May combined in the last 2 weeks. So it's certainly making for a bit of a challenge.
And helping fill people's pool.
Yep.
If the pools are open, right, yes, without the cover.
Yeah. And greening up the grass and all of that, for sure. And the weeds. It's amazing. As soon as you weed the garden, it rains, and then the weeds
back.
They're back.
Yep.
They're absolutely back. So I spent quite a bit. I spent almost a whole day in my garden. I felt like I shared last week all about the garden blogger fling that I was on. And my head is still, even over a week later, still reeling from all those gardens. I've been kind of processing the pictures and sorting through them.
And thank you for sending me some pictures. Now, that was your garden,
that
correct?
Was my garden. Oh, yes, you texted me while I was in my garden, so I snapped some pictures.
Gorgeous, gorgeous.
Yeah, so those are some things that were happening in my garden. And so I thought I really, after my mind racing of everybody else's garden that we got to see in our whirlwind tour last weekend, I wanted to spend some time in my own garden and moving things and changing things and trimming things up. So,
you know what they say, it's the shoemaker's kids are the last to get shoes,
right? That's right.
So we're the last to take care of our gardens.
Well, you know, mine is looking pretty good. Last one on the list to look after for
Let
sure.
Let me ask you this. Do you get people every once in a while stop their car or come by and say they love your garden or they want to look at it or take a picture? They do any of that?
Yeah, I do get that.
That's nice.
I do. Yeah. And in fact, the other morning, this was kind of funny. I was coming out to walk the dog and this lady kind of came out of nowhere in my yard.
Wow, you need security.
Me. Yeah, no, seriously. And she was literally, because I have a magnet on my car, mm-hmm. So she was literally in my yard trying to get my phone number off the magnet.
Oh, wow.
So that she could call me. So I thought
that's
that
nice.
Was kind of funny.
That's
so
she, nice.
Yeah, it was good. So yes, I do have people commenting, and my neighbors are all very, very jealous. Complimentary as well. And I help them. So I have to make sure that their gardens keep up the neighborhood.
That's
so
beautiful.
So that's a challenge. So there are some challenging things I've been struggling with, and I've seen it on social media. So I'm wondering if our listeners are having this problem too with a normally tough plant, the Annabelle hydrangea, one of my favorites. And, you know, it has some of its issues in the sense that people don't like it because it's floppy and gets very big. But other than that, if it's in the right place at the right time and you prune it correctly, then it's a great shrub. But I've been having, and it started last year. Thank you. It started last year, and it's happening again this year, in that it's actually a caterpillar that is going inside the leaves and rolling up the leaves and laying its eggs. Or not, I don't think it's laying eggs, but it's doing something. It's leaf roller.
Hmm.
And it's, so I did some initial research, and they said all you had to do was just tear off all the leaves. But, you know, the more I did that, the more I was going to not have anything blooming.
Is that something new in this area?
I don't know. I don't know if it was made worse because we didn't have rain. I don't know what it was. I had talked to somebody in a nursery, and he said he hadn't heard of anybody coming in to complain about it. And then I saw it posted on social media, and a lot of people chimed in that they were having that problem as well. So I thought I would address it here. And I did start cutting off the leaves and disposing of them, but it was really happening with even the new shoots that would have had a flower on it. So I thought, if I keep doing this, they're not even going to flower this year. So I actually did resort to some insecticidal soap, which of course is environmentally friendly. And I thought I'd give it a shot. And I have to say, I was nervous about it because then we've gotten all this rain, but it actually seems like it's worked. So I was just gave the leaves
news.
A really good coating. I've done two applications, and I did do some of the bigger ones. I did cut the leaves right off and make sure the leaf debris doesn't fall into the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you dispose of it. And I have seen the shrubs doing much better. So I am glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So, you know, so sometimes it's worth it to break out the insecticidal soap. But I do want to say that there are some shrubs that it is just a losing battle. Some of the viburnums, I've been to two customers' homes where they've just been a new one that I planted in their garden last year, and another customer where she had literally a 20-year-old viburnum. And this year, the insects just ate it. After 20 years, they just ate it and killed it, and it was dead.
Mm.
And it happened overnight. She goes, literally, I didn't even see it coming. So
that has to be heartbreaking.
Yeah, so there's some, and I was disappointed myself for the one that happened in the garden I planted last year, because usually I try to find the better varieties of viburnums where they are more disease and insect resistant. So when it comes to those, I find it's just not worth spraying and having to fight that battle, that it just is better to plant a better plant. And the other one is purple sand cherry. They're sown between insects and black knot. And I know everybody likes the burgundy foliage, but there are better choices. You can choose a Wigelia. You can choose a nine bark. There's some really, you know, better options that are going to be a lot less work. And, you know, me and my down-to-earth practical advice, I really think that we need to spend more time enjoying our gardens and not fighting the insects. So that's kind of my tip for the insect battle that's going on and might be going on in your garden now.
Insects.
That's right. And as far as another a reminder that now is a good time, I did this on the weekend. I have a yew hedge in my garden. And I know I put it in a lot of my customers' gardens, different heights and different ways. And I love my yews. But now is the new growth would have opened up. And now is the perfect time to do some trimming. So not necessarily with hedge trimmers. I'm not a fan of doing that. But if that's what you choose to do, that's fine. Otherwise, just doing some selective trimming inside the shrub. But always, if you're wanting to kind of keep it in that hedge format, to make sure that the top, if you're doing a box or like a real, you know, neat and tidy hedge, always have the top being angled a little narrower than the bottom. So that way, because if the top tends to get wider than the bottom, then you're really shading the bottom of the hedge and it's not going to continue to grow there. So with any hedge, that's kind of a little secret, is to keep the top of the hedge a little bit more narrow than the bottom. so that the top of the hedge doesn't shade out the bottom. And it grows really full all the way through. So that's another tip that I'd love to share.
And we will accept that. Thank you.
So I want to talk more because the fling is still so much on my mind. I'm really excited to have as my guest on the show today one of the other one of the many bloggers we got to meet from all over the world. Last week I talked all about the different gardens, but I did get to meet women and men from all over Ontario, all over the US, and even a couple from England. And I met Amanda as well, and she is in Prince Edward County, and her blog is called Cooking in Someone Else's Kitchen, and I'm really excited to share her story with you and have her on the show tonight. And we're going to talk about blogging, a little bit about the garden blogger fling, as well as vegetable gardening, which is something that she does in a large size. So I think we will stop for a pause right now for a commercial break and then come back with Amanda from Cooking in Someone Else's Kitchen. So thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path, and we will be right back on Reality Radio 101.
Follow the Moskwa.
Are you looking for that very unique and personal gift? Then look no further. At Pamper Me Organically, we have that very special gift for that very special person in your life. Pamper Me Organically is a Canadian-owned and operated company that specializes and sells organic bath and beauty products. Come in and visit us locally in the Pickering Village Courtyard in Pickering, Ontario, or visit our website at www.pampermeorganically.com. We ship worldwide for all of your online purchases. Call us at 416-629-1952. That's 416-629-1952. Remember, at Pamper Me Organically, we never sell any product that contains harmful chemicals, fragrances, colorants, or animal ingredients. We are Pamper Me Organically, where you always get great products at a great price.
Welcome to One Love Caribbean Groceries and African Foods, located at 595 King Street East, Wilson and King Street in Oshawa. They carry a wide variety of delicious tropical fruits, vegetables, spices, halal meats, fresh fish, fresh roti, patties, cosmetics, and much, much more. Their friendly staff will be happy to serve you with all your West Indian grocery needs. One Love Caribbean Groceries, located at 595 King Street East, just a few steps east of Wilson on King Street in Oshawa. Their telephone number is 905-440-4632. That's 905-440-4632.
The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is always welcome.
I'm broke, but I'm happy. I'm poor, but I'm kind. I'm short, but I'm healthy.
Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live right now, send her an email, realityradio101@yahoo.com.
I feel drunk, but I'm sober. I'm young and I'm underpaid.
And now back to your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, Gary, and welcome back, everyone. And I'm really looking forward to our chat with Amanda Hill, and I hope you will enjoy her story as well. So I'll just give you a little bit of a background before we welcome Amanda onto the show. Amanda moved to Canada with her family, with her husband and two children. They immigrated from England in 2007, partly motivated by a desire to become more self-sufficient in growing food for her family. And she started a blog about her immigration journey in 2006 and regularly updates it with information on her experiences with growing and harvesting vegetables, tending her flock of chickens, and struggling with Ontario's weather. And as I mentioned before, her blog is called Cooking in Someone Else's Kitchen. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thanks, Joanne. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So we didn't know each other aside from, we've known each other for what, 2 weeks now?
Yeah.
After having met at the Garden Toronto's garden blogger, Fling. And did you enjoy it as much as I did?
It was fabulous. I've never seen so many gardens in 3 days. I mean, I think we saw about 30 overall.
Yes.
And it was just the most incredible 3 days, you know, I've had in a long time. It was lovely to be in Toronto as a tourist instead of just going there for meetings, which is what I normally end up doing, and to see so many just different places that and different things that people were doing with their spaces was just fabulous, and so nice to spend 3 days with other people who just wanted to talk about gardens all the time.
Yes, I have to say that was certainly a highlight, and I think that's why I've had a hard time letting go about it. Because I just feel like I need to kind of rehash it to kind of continue to absorb it. I know I'm still processing my pictures and kind of posting them and putting them in folders appropriately. And did you have a favorite part?
I thought you were going to ask me that, and I was racking my brains. And I think actually it was probably the evergreen brickworks was my favourite part,
because
they'd done such amazing things with that space, which was a complete, you know, industrial wasteland at one point, and then they'd turned it into an amazing nature reserve. You know, I mean, it was a huge scale compared to a lot of the small gardens we saw, but I think that was, to me, the most impressive. And because I'm an archivist, I was really intrigued with the way they were using old archival images on the site, you know, on the side of buildings and things to explain what the site used to be. So, for me, that was that stood out. But, you know, there were so many interesting small gardens as well that it's hard to single out which of those was the most interesting. But certainly, the evergreen brickworks was a really interesting space. But, you know, the great thing about the Fling is because it's all garden bloggers, and there were about, 60 of us on this thing? They're all still...
Yeah, I think 60 to 90. I think there's some days I think we had more on one day than others, but because we had three buses of 30 the first day.
They're all posting about it, aren't they? They're all still putting up pictures, and so you can now go and look at all those blogs and see the whole thing from other people's points of view.
For sure. Yeah. And I found it interesting to see people, like, we're posting the same picture, but with a different point of view.
I
posted that one, that really unique little blue and white house from the Toronto Island. And someone else posted it, and then but I took a picture of the house, which didn't have a garden. It was one of the few houses that kind of stood out, but you know, really didn't have a garden. But if you turn, so you turn left to take the photo, and if you turned right, you had this. Their front view was this amazing skyline of Toronto, and it was just unbelievable that this little house had that big of a skyline. So, and then I know someone else posted, you know, from a different perspective. So, you know, it's really interesting to see that. And I think we were all there, but we were really experiencing it differently.
Yeah. I mean, that Toronto Islands Gardens, I mean, that is such an interesting community in itself, you know, being so close to the big city, but being completely not like a city at all.
Exactly. So, and isolated, really. Everything by boat and everything run by the, you know, the time of the ferry and things like that. So, that was really interesting.
That was my first time there. So, so that was, just in itself, that was an interesting experience for me because I've never been to the islands before. So, that was great.
And it was also not only meeting the people, but we, just like we do with the gardens we saw, everyone's blog. I think I also love learning about what everybody's blog was about. Because, you know, to other people, oh, we all are garden bloggers. But really, everybody that I got to speak to, anyway, I couldn't talk to everybody, but, you know, yours is very unique. There were some about, garden travels. Traveling, yeah. She went in garden tours all over the world. Some people were, new to gardening, and they're experimenting with vegetables in their backyard. You know, it was very much, mine tends to be tips for my customers and kind of practical advice for garden, like more flower gardens than vegetable gardens. So I think that was really interesting.
And they were all from different parts of North America as well. So there were lots of people from the States. So there were loads from Texas who have particularly challenging, growing conditions. And, and then there were some from, I think there were some from like the Seattle area. And then there were people who were specializing on particular things like pollinators or...
Yes.
There was one man I was talking to who writes about just about perennials.
Yes.
Very focused. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So, so that was really nice to do. And why don't we go back to you telling me a little bit about your blog. So I mentioned to our listeners that it's called Cooking in Someone Else's Kitchen. And I think it's a very interesting name, and it's very connected. You kind of named it that because it's very connected to your immigration story as well.
Yes, that was how it started out. It was really an immigration blog to begin with. When I started it, I was still living in England. So I think I started it in 2006, and it was going to be about our journey from England to Canada. And the reason I called it that was because we'd been on a road trip on a vacation to Canada in 2006, and we went from Calgary to Tofino, and we stayed in lots of different sort of self-catering accommodation along the way, and I was preparing meals in all these weird kitchens with different bits of equipment, and I had a feeling that moving countries would be like that, with that whole process of trying to things not being where you expect them to be and everything being a little bit different from what you have at home. So I thought that was what it was going to be like, cooking in someone else's kitchen. So that's where the name came from. It's not really a cooking blog, although I do sometimes put recipes on there, but it was mainly about that whole immigration process. But then obviously once you have immigrated and you're settling in, then it's no longer about that. It's about... Sometimes I post about things that I notice that are different about living in Canada from living in England. Although we moved from a city to a rural area, so I think a lot of the time the differences I'm noticing are more about the environment rather than, the
countries.
Country.
Yes. So okay. So you were in the city in England?
Yeah, we lived in Manchester in England, so we were in a very small suburban lot. We had our backyard was 10 metres by 10 metres square with a horrible bank of Leylandii cypress trees at the back.
Okay.
There wasn't much you could do with that garden. It was very small, but I did have two raised vegetable beds, 8 feet by 4 feet.
Okay, so you did. That was one of my next questions was, did you grow food when you were there in the UK?
I had two colleagues I was working with who had allotments. In England, that's a really big thing. If you live in a city, you can get an allotment plot where you can grow vegetables. And they both had allotments. And they did a lot of talking about vegetable growing at work. And I thought to myself, if these guys can do it, then maybe I can do it too.
Okay.
And so I put these two raised beds into my garden. They weren't very deep. They were only like 6 inches high, so it didn't take a lot of work. And I was doing this in January. This is what it's like in Manchester. You can be gardening
in January.
In January. So I find that hard to imagine now, but certainly, over there, that wasn't a problem. So I was putting in these raised beds. And so I had that space, 8 feet by 4 feet in the first year, and then the next year I put another one in. So I was already getting addicted. But then we knew we were going to be leaving, so there was no point getting an allotment or putting any more beds in that garden. Although I did plant it up before we left. We left in June, and I was so addicted, even though I knew I wouldn't be harvesting
these
vegetables.
Gosh.
I planted it anyway.
Well, I hope that the people who bought it appreciated the harvest.
It didn't sell till the following February, so I was I was telling my neighbours, go round, go and harvest stuff. So, so I think I was hooked. I was well and truly hooked on growing vegetables. And one of the things about moving to Canada was that we wanted a bit more land than you could buy in England for right. any kind of money, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, the house prices there were crazy compared to what they are here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they're still crazy in downtown Toronto, but if you go out of it, then they're not so bad.
Right.
So we got this, so we ended up buying a sort of small farm, well, small by Canadian standards, quite large farm by British standards.
Oh, okay, so you would consider it a farm?
Yeah, it is a farm. It's rated as a farm in terms of, you know, the local planning.
Zoning, I guess, yeah.
Zoning.
There's the word.
Yeah, zoning. Yeah, it's a rurally zoned area, and it's a 40-acre property. So.
Oh, yeah, I would say 40 acres. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Are you using it all?
No, we're okay. not. But most of it's wooded, so we don't have to do much with that, although we do use the dead trees for fuel in the winter. We have a couple of wood-burning stoves. So so this is all part of our plan, was to be more self-sufficient. So being able to, you know, heat our house with our own wood was part of that, and growing a vegetable garden was obviously another key part of that. We wanted to generate our own electricity as well, so we put up solar panels in the first year we were here, and generate electricity that way. So yeah, so it was all a huge change from living in a very, you know, urban environment
where
we had hot, you know, water provided by the town, whereas here we've got a well and basically, you know, our water supply is up to us. So lots of things that are so different about living here.
So did you and your husband were you always this, like, environmentally conscious, or is it something that just as you, I mean, because I know you have children as well, so you immigrated with your children, is it something?
I think it's sort of, I don't think I was when I was, you know, a teenager. I don't think I really thought about any of this, but I suppose as I got older and the more I've read, the more I'm more interested I've become in trying to live a more sustainable kind of lifestyle. I mean, we still occasionally fly back to the UK, so I can't say that we live in a completely green. My husband calls us light green.
Light green, that's good.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think we all strive. I mean, everybody can do a little bit, right? You know, everybody's going to be a different shade of green, I guess. We'll take that, your husband's analogy, because, you know, I think I'm doing a lot, but, you know, we're not solar or anything, and there's always more you could do, but
yeah, that's right. And I don't think you need to beat yourself up about it, you know.
Right.
It's just one of those, you do what you can. And so here we're lucky, we've got this space, we can do a lot more than we could have done when we were living in a city. And I mean, the vegetable garden was when we moved in, it was June, so there wasn't a lot we could do, but we had this there's two barns on the property behind the house. So the area between the house and the barns is my growing area, and it's probably about a third of an acre. So we planted an orchard that was in the spring of the year after we moved in. But the year we moved in, there hadn't been anybody farming the property for 2 years. It had been a beef cattle farm.
Oh, okay.
So I knew the soil was going to be amazing, because they'd had cows on there.
Yeah.
And it was all well rotted, so it was going to be lovely, but of course it was really overgrown when we moved in. It was you know, grass up to my sort of hips, so we had to cut it all down and make some vegetable beds. So that was the first thing we did, and we just sowed a buckwheat ground cover, you know, green manure in the first year, just to at least get the beds, you know, with something growing in them.
Right.
It was obviously too late to put vegetables in. But
yeah.
So that was our first priority.
So that was good. So then the previous owners didn't do any type of farming, so you were kind of starting from scratch.
Well, the previous owner had died 2 years previously, so he was doing the farming in terms of beef cattle, but then, you know, nothing had happened for 2 years, so everything was just overgrown and a bit, there were a few dead trees around and that kind of thing, but it was fenced. I mean, the area is fenced, so that was good, because at least we don't get deer coming in. But
right.
But it was it needed a lot of love.
And as far as the orchard goes, that was good thinking. So did you plant both apples and pears, or
Yeah, we've got apples, pears, a plum tree, and an apricot, and cherry. So, okay. So there's a bit of a range there. Mm-hmm. We had a small disaster with the apple trees, not last winter, but the winter before, when rabbits chewed the bark all the way
around. Because of all the snow.
But, you know, that's just part of, you know, living. We have all these different pests. Every year there seems to be a new pest or a new problem.
Definitely. I think the weather, the winter, definitely brings different challenges, including pests and animals and things like that. Considering you now, not all our listeners might be interested in starting a vegetable garden kind of from scratch like you did, maybe not to the scale that you started, but do you have any tips or suggestions regarding
that? I mean, those two raised beds I had in Manchester were perfect for a beginner, because it was kind of the you've probably heard of it, the square foot gardening technique. So basically you divide these 8x4 beds into just square foot squares, and then just grow a different crop in every square, and that worked really well, and it was easy to weed because it was a small area and it was raised, so it was off the grass, and it was just it was just great fun. I loved it, and it was like a sort of very miniature garden. Obviously, you don't get a lot of food off it, but it's a nice way to start, and then if you're anything like me, you get hooked and want another bed, and then you want a 40-acre farm in Canada.
That's right. So, but that would seem daunting. Like, now a third of it, to go from an 8x4 foot bed to a third of an acre. I mean, where did you? You mean tons of research, I'm sure, on which vegetables and what air, you know, what could go next to what type of thing.
Yes.
And did you grow it all from seed?
Yeah, mostly. I got things like asparagus and rhubarb as crowns, so that, you know, you could get a crop sooner, because they're a bit slow to grow from seed. But everything else I grew from seed, and it's just been a huge learning experience. As you say, you do a lot of research on the internet to find out what you're supposed to be planting when. And of course, you know, my experience in England was not directly transferable, because the conditions are so different. So things that I would have grown at different times of the year in England, I couldn't grow at the same time as the year here. So you had to kind of adapt accordingly. Yeah. Like peas and things, I would have sown much earlier in England, but you just can't here because the soil's too wet and cold. So, or buried under snow.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. Or ice.
Yes.
And frost. Yes. I know we both had that frost affect us. Few weeks ago, just in May. So. Would there be a frost in England at all?
You do get frost and snow there, but the frost, you know, can be just as damaging in May as they are here. But it, you know, it's just the degree of cold is different.
Yeah.
So you don't get minus 20, or very, very rarely would you get minus 20. You know, minus six would be quite bad over there. So it's just a completely different. It's probably more like growing in British Columbia, you know, it'd be more that kind of climate. I wanted four season gardening. You know, I did want proper winters. That's what I told myself. You know, now I wonder about that.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I don't think I mentioned in your bio that you are in Prince Edward County, as that's where you chose to settle. And I think that's my husband and I were there last summer. We spent 3 days there and got to tour around. And I think it's a great, great community, toured some of the wineries and some of the restaurants, of course, and huge fans of the area. So
It's a great place to visit, and it does a very good job of promoting itself on the internet, because that's how we ended up here.
It's good to know, for sure. Yeah. So aside from now, if people are not up to starting it from seed, there's nothing wrong with buying, you know, something already started, right?
No, that's right. Although I have seen some ridiculous things, like some garden centre in England, you could actually buy a carrot, one carrot in a pot. And I thought that was a bit silly.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there are definitely things you should start by seed, right? That are quick, like lettuce even. That's pretty quick.
Yeah.
And
yeah, lettuce are great, especially for beginners. And you know, certainly nothing wrong with buying tomato plants from a grower, because they you know, they take a bit of cosseting to begin with and a bit of time. So if you can, you know, just buy plants that are ready to go into the garden in at the end of May or beginning of June, then that's perfect.
That's good. There's no shame in that, because I have to confess, I even buy my lettuce already started too. I do buy
really?
The seed. I do just because, well, partly because of what I do for a living. So when you were busy starting your seeds, I'm now out with my rubber boots and winter coat out in other people's gardens trying to picture it without the snow and draw pictures of it and measure it and stuff like that. So I'm a little distracted at that, you know, crucial time. And, you know, if you miss that time, you miss it, right? Yeah. You know, you have that window.
But with lettuce, you can grow them, you know, sow them every couple of weeks.
So
you know.
Okay.
You should do that.
Okay. Well, what I've done was, you'd be proud. I have it's called a woolly pocket. And it's actually a big pocket of like this neat fabric on my fence, and it hangs because I don't have a lot of space for vegetable gardening. So I have it, and my husband, when he had to screw it to the fence, he's like, "You're going to do what with this?" And I'm like, "I'm going to grow lettuce." And last year I did. I grew three kinds of lettuce in this big pocket hanging from my fence. And then, yes, as I picked it, I did sprinkle more seed in so that it would keep growing. So
yeah,
I did that.
Succession sowing with lettuce is one of the things I nearly always get wrong. So I've now resorted to putting a reminder in my email program that comes up every so often and says, sow lettuce in outside, or sow lettuce in greenhouse, depending on the time of year. And so I dutifully go out and do it. Otherwise, I wouldn't remember. And
there you go. So now you're showing us how to use technology with good old-fashioned gardening. So that's good. So what else do you find is an easy... I know tomatoes can be a little bit challenging. And do you grow cucumbers? Do you do them up at all, or do you just let them spread?
Yeah, I actually grow them on tomato cages because I don't use those for tomatoes. So the cucumbers seem to like growing upwards. So I grow them on those, and they do quite well like that. What else is easy? Things like beets are really easy. And again, they're things I sow in succession. So that's another one I get a reminder every so often to sow more beets.
It is incredible that beets and carrots can grow that fast from a seed, you know, when you think about it nature-wise, you know.
They're good ones. Mm-hmm. And I do grow things like cabbage as well, although last year the rabbits ate all of my cabbages. So this year I resorted to making a powder of dried chilies and sprinkling that around the brassicas, and it actually seems to have worked. They haven't eaten them all.
That's good. Now, what do you like? Are you making enough food for just your family, or what do you do? Or do you have? Can you sell it as well, or are you at that point?
Yeah, I've been to the farmers markets a few times with excess. Because it's very hard to judge how much to grow just for a family, and so I nearly always end up with a glut at some point. So either I have to preserve it, but if it's things like lettuce, you can't really preserve lettuce, so I have to get rid of it somehow other way. So, you know, people avoid me at this time of year because I'm walking around with bags of lettuce.
Oh gosh, really? I would think it'd be a good thing. Have you harvested your lettuce already?
Well, it's because we have the hoop house greenhouse.
Oh, okay.
And what happens is I usually let the lettuce go to seed eventually, and it seeds itself. And then this time of year, because it just comes up, I don't, you know, need to sow anymore, and it just keeps coming. So I have my greenhouse is pretty much full of lettuce at the moment.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. But luckily I have chickens, and they like lettuce that's gone to seed as well. So I just, when it does bolt, I just feed it to them, and they devour it. So that works out well.
Excellent. And I know we've got a bit of experience on chickens, because I've had another friend of mine, who landscape designer, who raises chickens in the Waterloo area. And Janet really spoke highly of raising chickens and having your own eggs. How do you have a lot of chickens?
Sorry, I'm just... lost my voice for a second.
Oh, okay, no problem. I'm sure you start out with some chickens, and then they just, well, it depends. If can you have a rooster?
I actually have three roosters.
You do? Okay. Because that's one thing we did when Janet talked about it. We talked about kind of having chickens in the city. And and she, even though she's in a smaller town, she still was considered city, and she couldn't have a rooster.
No, that's one benefit of being rurally zoned. We can have roosters. And I think it's 37 chickens at
really?
The moment. And we've just hatched, I had a broody hen, so we've just hatched five chicks this week. So that was nice. It's so sweet seeing a broody hen looking after her chicks.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got a few more now, but about 30 laying hens at the moment. So we sell those as well, just from the farm gate and to friends and neighbours. So I like that. I like being able to feed our neighbours, and it means you get to talk to them a bit more than you would otherwise as well. But
For sure. Well, why don't we pause there, Amanda, and we'll just take a commercial break, and we will be right back to finish chatting. You've been listening to Down the Garden Path on Reality Radio 101. We'll be right back.
Looking for that very unique and personal gift? Then look no further. At Pamper Me Organically, we have that very special gift for that very special person in your life. Pamper Me Organically is a Canadian-owned and operated company that specializes and sells organic bath and beauty products. Come in and visit us locally in the Pickering Village Courtyard in Pickering, Ontario, or visit our website at www.pampermeorganically.com. We ship worldwide for all of your online purchases. Call us at 416-629-1952. That's 416-629-1952. Remember, at Pamper Me Organically, we never sell any product that contains harmful chemicals, fragrances, colorants, or animal ingredients. We are Pamper Me Organically, where you always get great products at a great price.
Put the special into your special event. With our finger on the pulse of today's event scene, we provide for all your entertainment needs. Amuse and amaze with look-alike performers, illusionists, and interactive entertainment. Fill the air with jazz, dance music, classic rock, Latin, and disco. Thrill your guests with tarot and psychic readings. And treat the kids with children's entertainers, face painting, inflatables, and more. When your reputation is on the stage, let our reputation for excellence earn you a standing ovation. For more information, visit aratoevents.com.
Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne, send her an email right now, realityradio101@yahoo.com.
I'm gonna tell you right away, I can't wait another day.
And now, back to your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, and welcome back to Down the Garden Path. And Gary, did you do that on purpose? Or was
of
that
course.
A cool? Oh, very good. Amanda, did you like that?
Yeah.
I always sing along to that intro song, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, Amanda. Very nice, Gary. Well, thank you, and welcome back to Down the Garden Path. I'm here with my new friend, Amanda Hill, from Prince Edward County, and her blog is Cooking in Someone Else's Kitchen. And you'd love to have new followers. I hope that our listeners will check out your blog. Do you still feel like you're cooking in someone else's kitchen, or is it starting to feel like home?
I think I should change the name now, probably. Yeah, it definitely feels like home here now.
Good, good. And how have your children adjusted? Because if they went from city living to country living, I mean, they're probably having to help with the chickens and the yard and...
Yeah. My eldest does, but my youngest can't bear the chickens.
Oh, no?
So not so helpful, but the eldest one, helps out with weeding sometimes when they're particularly short of cash.
Oh, yes, so, exactly. They'll amazing what they'll do when they need a little bit of pocket money.
Although
I have a hard time getting mine have kind of, they did so much digging plants out or planting things in over the years that now that they're stronger and they can actually drive the vehicle, they have no interest in helping me, unfortunately. But what can you do, eh? Are you still, because you said you were an archivist, did I pronounce it correctly, and are you still doing that part-time?
Yes, that's right. I'm one day a week, I'm the archivist for Deseronto, just about 40 kilometres from here, and that's great. So it sort of keeps my hand in and keeps that historical aspect of my life.
Oh, good.
but funny, interesting enough, I learned recently that our property and the one behind it was originally the site of a Wendat village. This would have been about 500 years ago. So
wow.
I find that very interesting that you know, I'm sowing squash and corn and beans in an area that would have been used for squash and corn and beans 500 years ago by native people. So I like that continuity.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Are there things, what's your favorite thing to grow or thing that you find you have the best success with?
You know what, peppers I find, I just love the way they look and they're good to eat and you can preserve them really easily. But I think I'd probably have to say that tomatoes are my absolute favorite because I can almost be self-sufficient. You know, if I get a good crop, which I didn't last year, I have to say.
Yeah, I don't think anybody did.
Yeah, I was picking, I think I used my last jar of tomato sauce the day I started picking them.
Wow.
From, you know, the previous year's tomato sauce, and I started picking fresh tomatoes the day I used that up. So I was really pleased with myself that I'd managed to have tomatoes all year round.
Yeah,
that doesn't always happen.
yeah, definitely. It's funny because I keep growing them, and as I've mentioned before, I grow in containers because of my small backyard with no... Because our home we bought has a pool, so no backyard really. I have a large front flowering garden, but not. Although I did plant, two tomato plants and a pepper plant in my front flower garden. My city trees have a long story, but the emerald ash borers, my city trees have been cut down, so now I have way more sun. So this year I thought, you know what, let's see how it does. So I have them growing in the back in containers as well as now in my front garden. But my challenge is, you'd be laughing at this, Amanda, is that I'm the only one in my family who actually likes tomatoes. My sons and my children and my husband do not like what they call raw tomatoes. So so if we grill them or turn them into salsa or something like that, then they'll eat them. But at the grape tomatoes, my youngest son will kind of pick them off, and he says they are quite sweet if he can just put them right in his
mouth, and he will eat them. So I tend to grow the smaller ones just for that very reason versus the large tomatoes. So that's kind of funny. And peppers I found working okay in a container. Last year, my crop did not do well either.
It was such a cool summer last year. I think that was the reason. I mean, the ones I planted outside didn't do really anything at all, whereas the ones in the greenhouse were okay. They were fine, that extra bit of protection.
Yes.
But last summer was just cooler than it could have been.
Yeah. And they said, and the reading I did was that peppers, tomatoes too, but peppers really need some heat to get going.
Yeah, and the same with eggplants. I grow them, but they have to be in the greenhouse. And you know, last summer, they just about set some fruit, but only at the very end of the summer.
Okay.
You know, whereas other years, I'm picking, and I don't know what to do with all of these eggplants.
Right.
So, I'm hoping it'll be a better year for them this year. And last year, for the first time, I grew okra.
Okay.
Which did quite well, but only in the greenhouse again. I had some outside, because all these things are always experiments. You know, I don't know. I've never grown it before. I don't know what the best conditions are. And the ones outside never got above about 5 inches tall, whereas the one in the greenhouse was about 6 foot high.
Wow, really? I didn't know it grew that high. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and it's got a really pretty flower. It's like a morning glory flower, which just opens for one day, like a morning glory. And, so that was an interesting experience, and I think I'm the only one who likes
so you can relate to my tomato situation.
A lot of what I grow is like that, like celery. I'm the only one who eats that. But I still grow.
Goodness. Well, I wanted to thank you very much for coming on. And there is much more. I really hope that you'll come on again, because you had some great, you also can talk to us about the preserving of your food, and whether people are growing it themselves or going to the farmer's market to buy it. How to preserve it is, I don't have any experience with that as well. And I think our listeners would probably love to learn more about that. And you mentioned the drying, the canning, freezing, fermenting, and pickling were some of your tips that you could share with us. So I really hope that you'll come on again in another month or so. I guess you'll have to tell me the best time to start talking about that. but I would love to, for you to share some tips and instructions with our listeners on the best way to preserve our food, because I think even if people aren't growing it themselves, if they're visiting local farmers, like your people in your neighborhood are coming to you, I think the whole buy local is a really important thing that we need to support. Sometimes you're buying too much of it, or you have leftovers, and I hate throwing it out. So I think that would be a great topic.
Okay.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with us? Yeah, I've got is your blog cookinginsomeoneelseskitchen.com?
It's just someoneelseskitchen.com.
Okay, someone, that's right.
Yeah, but
that's right.
If you search for cooking in someone else's kitchen, I'm sure it'll come up.
Yes, but no, I kept searching both ways, and it actually does come up when I did type in cooking in someone else's kitchen. It comes up like that, but someone else's kitchen, I have it in front of me now on my iPad here, .com. So I think it's beautiful. I was reading through some of it yesterday and today, just about your journey here. And I'm sure our listeners would love to hear that, because I think it's wonderful that you're here, and welcome to Canada. And I know we kept joking sometimes in the fling, we'd refer to you as when we'd refer to the people who were here from Britain, we'd point to you, and then we'd go, no, wait a minute, she's with us, she's Canadian. So you could have had, flip both sides of it. So thank you. And thank you for sharing about your thoughts on the blogger fling as well, and I hope we stay in touch.
Yeah, I'm sure we will.
Okay, well, thank you again, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Joanne.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
Bye.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed listening to Amanda's story about immigrating to Canada and starting.
It was going to be a cooking show.
Did you think it was going to be because it was cooking in someone else's kitchen? But isn't that a neat title, though, that
it
she
is.
Really traveling from there to here and learning to grow? And she's still experimenting with things in the garden, as we all are. So I think it's a great story, and it shows you that anybody can start, whether you're starting from big or small in the garden, whether it's flowers or vegetables.
It's a great thing to try. And I think it's very admirable how her and her husband are trying to be very self-sufficient as well. So with their solar, adding solar to their farm and things like that. So I look forward to having Amanda back on again. So if yes. you have any questions or anything else, you know how to reach me. Check me out on my website at downtoearth.ca. I'm here. If you have any gardening questions or problems, call me. All my social media is there. Tweet me a picture of a problem, anything like that. I'd love to help. And I look forward to chatting with you down the garden path next week. Thanks for listening to Down the Garden Path on Reality Radio 101.
You've been listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101.